Greg Peskin for Leonard Lopate on WNYC. I generated a word cloud for Ernie Kovacs' Wikipedia entry. You know, word clouds, they're the visual representations of the most common words or phrases in a block of text. So obviously Kovacs and television, those words figured prominently. But you also see phrases, first time, groundbreaking, the words genius, the words inventive. Kovacs was all of those things to the medium of television, but until now, his reputation rested mainly on two or three short clips, a special from the 70s, and the collective fading memory of those who cherish his work from his heyday. Now there's a box set of 13 hours of Ernie Kovacs' work. Its story is pretty interesting, as is the story of Ernie Kovacs himself. The curator of the DVD box set from Shout Factory joins me now. You are Ben Modell?
That's right. I certainly am.
Thanks for coming on, Ben.
Glad to be
Before
here.
We even get into Kovacs, we were talking about this. You're a silent film accompanist.
That's right.
And how'd you come to love Kovacs?
Well, my parents were huge fans. And so in 1977, when public television aired a series called The Best of Ernie Kovacs, they knew my interest in visual humor, and they said, you have to watch this. And we all sat down and watched it. My folks watched it, you know, his stuff religiously. My mom said that when she was in graduate school, she had dinner with Ernie Kovacs every week, which is the way a lot of people talk about him. It's like they knew him. People would tell me, "Oh, Ernie Kovacs made me late for work. I was late for school because of Ernie Kovacs, not because I was watching the show."
Right.
People had have a personal connection. So that's kind of how I first, and how a lot of people. My generation first found him is because of the Best of Ernie Kovacs series that was done in the 70s.
And when I tell people I'm talking about Ernie Kovacs today, oh, the love that pours out in a way that you don't hear it about TV performers of the era who were supposedly, you know, 10 times as popular. You won't hear that sort of effusive remembering about Milton Berle, for instance.
Right.
People remember the one-liners, and he's famous for a lot of things. But with Kovacs, it's visceral.
Oh, absolutely. And Edie always... Edie,
this is his wife, Edie Adams.
Edie Adams told me that, you know, Kovacs fans are devout. They absolutely are. And you mention his name to somebody and their eyes light up. Just before I came in here, I was talking to Alice Cooper, and you mentioned in his eyes, just we were just talking about all the different bits and people, you know.
Yeah.
Our family, we worked our schedule around. We sat down and watched those specials that were on in 1961. Ernie had, I guess, what you could call television presence, the way someone on film has screen presence, or radio people have, you know, radio presence, or whatever you want to call it. And for me, a lot of what I sense about from watching his shows, they feel like visits.
Yeah.
In the liner notes, I say that. With Ernie, it wasn't so much he was breaking the fourth wall. I don't know that there was a fourth wall.
He spoke with sincerity. When he would address the camera in the beginning of the show, he had a style that seemed off the cuff. That maybe it was. I mean,
he absolutely was.
He seemed to love any chance to improv. When something went wrong, that was going right for Ernie.
Oh no, absolutely. Yeah. There are scripts that survive that are typed, but a lot of them say Kovacs, or just capital K, small s, blah blah blahs about dot dot dot.
Yeah.
So you knew that he was just going to wing something. And Edie said that she became the master of the 10-second film, meaning that Ernie would gesture to her, she'd come on, and for 10 seconds she would come up with something while he got another hat or whatever, and then went on to the next bit. Because in the beginning, on Three to Get Ready, the two-hour morning wake-up show, which...
This is the Philadelphia version of the Today Show.
Yeah, and actually...
The first kind of morning show.
It really was. Yeah. You know, he had to fill 2 hours. And when the Today Show started and went national, it kicked Three to Get Ready off the air. But he had, this is 1951, and they thought, well, who's watching anyway? Until they said, well, you know, if you're watching or whatever, send in a postcard, and they were flooded with mail, and they were like, oh, somebody is watching. But to fill 2 hours with playing records and reading, you know, weather reports, you had to be, you know. Just had an incredible imagination, and he didn't just, you know, talk or tell jokes. I like to think that Kovacs was a television comedian, literally.
Yeah.
He wasn't a comedian on television, but
right.
He really used the language of cinema in many ways, and the fact that you were looking at him on a small box in your living room, and like you said, he would speak in a very soft-spoken manner as if he was sitting across from you. Even in later shows, there's a 1957 Ed Sullivan show where he's guest hosting, mm-hmm. and there's all this tumult running around him, and there's trapeze artists, and they finish, and they're out of breath. Oh, yes, we're going to be at the Tropicana, and then we're going to be over here. And Ernie would say, well, it's very nice to have you on the program, and we'll see you next time. And you think, God, the studio audience probably can't even hear him, but as a home audience member, we're absolutely connecting with him.
Well, here's Ernie. We have a clip of him introducing one of his specials. And what struck me about the clip is it's funny. The content is funny, but it also reflects an absurdity. He paints this picture of a thing that's going to happen that you can't imagine happening on an Ernie Kovacs show. Let's hear that.
And then you receive a lot of calls from agents and managers who have various acts they feel might go well on the show. There's always such a variety that it's hard to pick the best ones. It wasn't too easy to pass up some of them either. There was Mimo, an elephant that does imitations. Bing Crosby, Fred Astaire, the whole thing, and we had to throw him out. He would have worked with peanuts. A trampoline act. A trampoline act was just about one of the most interesting I ever saw. Four fellas bounced up. Just up. In fact, it's the last we ever saw him. The trampoline's still around here. Everybody keeps tripping over it.
Ba-dum-bum.
Yeah.
And that's great, and you can't imagine that, and you almost think that there's some way that if he can saw himself while sitting on a tree branch and have the tree fall instead of him, why can't he do trampoline guys just jumping up into the air and never coming down?
Well, absolutely. I think that had he had today's technology at his fingertips, he would absolutely have done that. He had would come up with these wild ideas. Edie told me she referred to it as back of the head comedy because an idea would flash across the back of his head and he would just make it happen on television. There was almost no filter, and really he demanded a complete creative control. And that's why his shows are so innovative and in some ways bizarre. And you watch some of these things, even some of the sketches that I've seen on his morning daytime half-hour show in 1956, you watch it and you think, wow, this is brilliant. And then you think, wait, this was on network television?
Yeah.
It looks like something you might see, you know, as experimental video from the 1970s. And, oh, my gosh, there's a bit that's on the set that's labeled a series of magazine ads. But basically, Ernie, Bill Wendell, and Edie act out freeze frame by freeze frame a spoof of a Charles Atlas ad with thought balloons superimposed over them. And the bit goes on for like 3 minutes. And you think, wow, this was on network television, but it was an idea he had, and he just mounted it and put it on television.
And it's not only, like you say, it could be in a museum as a piece of performance art or a piece of video art. You know, he would work really dark. There was this one quiz show parody called Whomdunit.
Oh, exactly. And he did that sketch a number of times.
And in Whomdunit, the question refers to who shot the panelist who's
exactly.
going to show up.
They wound him first, and they bring him in. And basically what happens is while the panel is guessing who he is, he bleeds and expires at the end of the show.
Because the panelists are so bad at guessing, they take so long, the guy just dies. He's bleeding pretty profusely.
Oh, yeah.
This is in 1956.
No, absolutely. A lot of the ideas he had were still relevant today. There's a sketch he did called Welcome Transients. Which the name was a takeoff of a show at the time called Welcome Travelers, but it's about.
And by the way, Whomdunit was a joke about the show. Who was it? What do you know? Wait, there was one show that was supposed to have bad grammar in the title, I think. And so Whomdunit was supposed to be sort of a meta joke about that.
But who do you trust?
That's it.
Exactly.
It should be whom do you trust?
Right, exactly. Right. And so in Welcome Transients, the earliest iteration of the sketch that I've seen. Ernie says, well, this is often when a panel, somebody is get booked for a talk show, they're interviewed so that there's no spontaneity. And then they go on, and what happens in the sketch is that Ernie is interviewing the other person, and they can't remember their own story. And they keep saying, I'll never forget it. It happened as if it was yesterday. And then Ernie's character has to keep feeding him. Did your sister Mabel get bitten by a snake? Oh, yes, like you said. But it's still happening today we've become more aware of the fact that people on talk shows are it's completely pre-scripted.
Right. last week, literally, I was listening to the Adam Carolla podcast. He was doing a bit about the pre-interview in the talk show.
Yeah.
This is an Ernie Kovacs bit from 50 years ago. In the video, do we see where the germs of a lot of his bits originate? Do we see smoking underwater and blowing smoke, or does that just, you know, come fully formed from his brain?
Well, that particular bit, we see, actually, a friend of mine, a film historian and collector named Eric Grayson, found some raw footage from around during the shooting of Our Man in Havana, and you see him in a swimming pool that has a glass wall trying this bit out. I'm sure he had been trying to figure out how to do it for a long time. He does it by putting cream in his mouth and then going underwater.
And he pockets the mouthful of milk or cream.
Yeah, exactly.
And when it looks underwater, it looks like he's blowing smoke
cigar. Yeah, absolutely. There are some things on disc one, there's a lot of material from his earliest days in Philadelphia, 1951, and CBS in 52. And you see things that he was doing later on, but you see he was already at the very beginning trying a lot of these bits out. And the idea of the kind of satire he was doing and the way he would use the television as a visual medium, putting... some of the stuff doesn't survive, but there's something on one of the later specials where he basically taped a kaleidoscope to the television lens. But he was doing that in 1951 because he had to fill airtime. He was doing stuff like that. You see him use a wipe,
yeah,
or a split screen, and you think, he didn't really invent it. The effects were always possible, or flipping the camera, the image upside down. He was just using them.
Right.
Whereas nobody else, well, what would you use it for? Well, he would find a way to take the image and invert it and make it look like he was vacuuming the ceiling.
Right.
Because
or performing on a set built on a 15-degree angle. Put
exactly.
The camera on the same angle. Everything goes sideways.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
One of his most famous bits. I'm Mike Peskin for Leonard Lopate on WNYC. Speak with Ben Modell, who's curated this great 6-CD, DVD box set of Ernie Kovacs. So here's why I think Ernie Kovacs would be really successful today. One, genius is genius. Two, the audience has caught up with him. I mean, he
Absolutely.
Would sometimes set up these bits, what seems to the way we think today, painfully slow. Three, he was meta at a time when TV had, you know, 6 shows on it. The
exactly.
source material wasn't there. And four, you know, there was an article in the New York Times by, I think, Adam Sternberg saying that we're now in a post-joke, a post-punchline era,
yeah,
where sort of absurdist situations are much more appealing. You look at the comedy of Zach Galifianakis. It all adds up to that. This guy would be... He was respected, but not a huge star then. I mean, he'd be bigger than Apatow now.
Yeah, I think so. You know, a lot of the humor in Kovacs isn't so much in individual lines or jokes, but it's the concept behind the sketch is what's funny. And that's what makes it difficult often to do, you know, a bunch of quick clips because you can't take, you know, 8 seconds from the Nairobi Trio and show it to somebody and have them get it. You have to watch the entire 3 minutes, and you can't explain, you know, the Nairobi Trio to anybody and have them get it, or most of Ernie Kovacs's material. You can't say, okay, well, you're watching an oscilloscope image on the screen while hearing the original German of Mac the Knife, and then in the middle of this are a bunch of blackout gags. Wait, this was on television?
Well, that was appealing to anyone?
Yeah.
The Nairobi Trio was, of course, his three gorillas playing instruments, and Jonathan Lethem, who writes a bit in the press, in the material, in the DVD box set, asserts that people as young as 4 and as old as 80 always find the Nairobi Trio hysterical. I showed it to my 4-year-old, and he indeed found it hysterical.
Yeah, it's absolutely, and it's very simple. And it was another one of those back-of-the-head things where somebody, the boy singer on the show, brought in this record thinking, well, Ernie will think that this might trigger his imagination, and Ernie heard it, listened to it again, and according to legend, within 15 minutes had it lined up and staged, and really hardly changed at all for the next several years.
You know, we haven't gotten into his biography that much. He was he a bootlegger?
No, he wasn't.
I think I read, or maybe
I think
his dad
was. I think his father was, okay. And then depression ended, and his father joined the police force. But
yeah.
Basically, Ernie grew up in Trenton, New Jersey, and was involved with theater in his high school. And later was able to get a scholarship to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts and came to the city for a year or two and then became very, very ill and was in a ward recovering from this. It was pleurisy and pneumonia. But even during this time, you know, he supposedly would tape messages in tinfoil to his chest, so when they put him under the fluoroscope, you would see "out to lunch" on his chest, and he would organize card games.
Gags.
And eventually wound up escaping from there and wrote a column for the Trentonian and eventually got into radio, and he was on radio for several years in Trenton on WTTM before sending in an audition tape to WPTZ in Philadelphia.
There's a quote from in Time Magazine wrote an article about his famous half hour special, which is where he did his, which was no dialogue except for him introducing it, and where he did his his 15 degree gag with his famous tramp character. And the programming chief at the time, his name was Tom McAvity, called it Ernie's audition. He said, "If the rating is good, we hope to sell him as TV's big new comedy talent next fall." Now, that special, that half hour, if there is one thing of his career that he's most famous for and that goes in the Hall of Fame, it's that. But was the rating good? Did the audience ever catch up to Ernie?
Well, yes and no. I mean, the rating on that particular show, at least the response to it, was very large. And what was, you know, the thing about that show is it was aired in January of 57, the silent show. NBC had a weekly color spectacular that ran 90 minutes. And Jerry Lewis was booked to do it. He had just split up with Dean Martin and only took the first 60 minutes. And nobody wanted to follow Jerry Lewis. And Kovacs at that time was kind of at sea. He had was basically tag team hosting Tonight with Steve Allen and had been working on some of the gags that wound up in the silent show. And he just did it, but he said, "I have to have complete creative control." And after that show aired, everybody was talking about Ernie Kovacs. It was the biggest, probably the biggest audience he had. Although, ironically, for the next 2 years, he did not have a regular television show. He spent 57 and 58 doing guest shots and making movies, and it wasn't until the fall of 59 when he landed a panel show called Take a Good Look,
yeah,
sponsored by Dutch Masters, which it's, you could call it a panel show, but it's also a piece of absurdist theater as well, which ran for all close to 2 years. That it wasn't until then he had another regular television show. But I think he was happy to not have the daily grind of creating a live television show, which he'd been doing since 51.
And he was described as a utility infielder of comedy because he worked for all the networks.
He worked everywhere.
Was that good or bad for him?
Well, it was good in the sense that when a show was canceled on one network, he managed to pick up something somewhere else. He finished at WPTZ when Today knocked Three to Get Ready off the air, but they wound up doing something called Kovacs Unlimited at CBS, and that ran for close to 2 years. And there's an episode of that on the set. There's only one because as of right now, there's only one kinescope from the entire 2 year run that survives that I know of. And if you have one in your closet or barn, contact us because we're looking for stuff from that. But then please
don't store the kinescopes in the barn.
Yeah, right, exactly. But you never know where they are. But yeah. You know, and then when that ended, he wound up on Dumont, the Dumont network, for a year or so, and then he was on he just went from network to network, and there was always something always wound up turning up.
The thing I wondered about Kovacs, and I don't know if this is a function of a real reflection of what he was like or a don't speak ill of the dead phenomenon. He died in 1962 at the age of 43, very, very early. This was a guy who had a huge artistic vision. It was never fully embraced. He would sleep 2 or 3 hours a day. You know, everything on his show, it seemed like when you read the credits today for a half-hour show has 13 writers. He had, you know, 5 writers on a show. So he has this tremendous output, this tremendous work ethic. Could have been a lot of frustration, but it doesn't seem that he was tortured by it. I mean, everyone writing about him talks about what a fine, friendly fellow he was till the end. Is that accurate?
Yeah, as everybody I've talked to or read about just really loved working with Ernie. They really loved working with him, and that's why when he did those specials for ABC in 1961, he would shoot for, you know, into, you know, triple gold and overtime, partially because he was only given one day to shoot this special. And if you watch these specials, you think, well, this must have taken them a week to shoot. And when they were shot, they would shoot 24 hours
around the clock. They had 8-second skits and a bunch of them. They were all funny.
And they had to be done very, very quickly on the day of. These things had to be mounted. And some of them are extremely complicated. Some of the music, what he called sound into sight pieces, like The Story of a Drop of Water, which is one of my favorites, or the operating room or the musical office. These are incredibly elaborate. And in an interview he did for the Canadian Broadcasting System in 1961, you know, he said he had Sam Goldwyn over and showed him one of these music pieces. And, you know, he said, oh, well, if we had made this at the studio, it would have taken us a couple of weeks. How long did it take you? And Kovacs said, wow, well, we worked all afternoon. But people really loved Ernie and they loved working with him. And he treated people very well.
Yeah.
To his own financial detriment, but people really were dedicated to working with him.
Out from Shout Factory, it's a 6-DVD set. It doesn't even begin to tell the whole story of Kovacs, but it's bigger than anything we've had so far. And my guest has been Ben Modell. He's been talking about this Ernie Kovacs box set. I recommend it highly, and thank you for joining us today, Ben.
Thanks so much for having me on. And if I could just mention, if you buy it from Shout Factory's website, you'll get a 7th bonus disc, and you'll get 15 hours of Kovacs material. So go to shoutfactory.com.
And I should mention that we have a link on our show page to that effect. Okay.
Thank you so much.